I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal, and today our guest is Do Kim, an M&A partner at Skadden Arps in New York. Do, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, David. Great to be on.
So we're going to talk about your career arc on today's podcast. First of all, your work as a translator before law school, how you got into corporate law and M&A, your time as an associate at Skadden and a couple of the pivotal transactions you worked on, then making partner at the very beginning of the pandemic and that transition to becoming a partner. So with that, tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to law school to begin with.
Sure. So I never thought that I wanted to be a lawyer or that I wanted to go to law school. I have no family members that are in the legal industry. So when I was growing up, I really wanted to be a writer. I think basically when I read my first book, I decided I wanted to become a novelist. I really loved reading and writing and storytelling. But then as I grew into my teenage years, I think because I had moved around growing up, I had lived in a few different countries, Australia, France. I went to an American school when I was in France and Korea as well. I also had the international bug in me and I knew I wanted to do something international. And I didn't quite know what I was going to do with those two things until I went to college. I went to college in Korea. I went to Ewha Women's University and Ewha had a special program at the time. I think I was part of the second class. It was the international studies program designed to groom future Korean female leaders that would work at international organizations and different types of international organizations. So it was a very small program, bilingual, interdisciplinary, focused on international relations, politics, economics. And I loved the program. It was so interesting to me to be studying all those different things. And fascinatingly enough, I gravitated towards international economics and trade, even though that was not, again, growing up, I loved writing. I was an English literature and history buff, but I loved international trade. I loved international trade policy. And I think toward the end, when I was junior, senior year, I took international trade law. And I thought, aha, this is so, so interesting. It's all about imposing rules and order on how different countries are trading with each other and really underlying that, how private parties are engaging in these trading transactions with each other. And I love that. And I thought to myself that I would go into international trade. I wanted to work at the WTO and be at the center of trade policymaking, trade dispute settlement. So that is what led me to NYU to get my law degree.
So between college and law school, you worked for a year as a translator.
Yes.
Talk about that experience.
Yeah, so I worked for a year and a half as a translator and editor at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade in Korea. And it was an incredibly important experience for me. I worked there between college and law school because I really wanted to see in practice what it was like to be working in trade policy. And I did not know at the time when I took on the job, because the job was to review and edit speeches, various papers, documents that the different departments in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade were creating and also putting out into the world. But I didn't know at the time that Korea was also going to start its negotiations with the United States to enter into a free trade agreement. It was really a historic trade pact between two countries that have been strong allies for a very long time. And I got involved in those trade negotiations as the translator for the automotive sector. So I participated in every single round of negotiations. I think they had 6 to 7 rounds. And I was translating for the Korean side, and I was also editing and helping craft the text of the treaty that related to the automotive sector. It was an incredible experience. I mean, it was so much fun, but it was really hard too, because being a translator, you're always on, you're always listening, you can't miss anything, and you're always on your toes. And at the same time, you have to know each party's positions inside out, because that's the only way you can, at the time when you're actually translating, a literal translation most of the time will not do justice to the actual meaning that the principal party is trying to convey. So to be able to do justice to the meaning and actually convey the full meaning and intent, you really need to know the context. You need to have a good understanding of the substantive points. And then on the time thinking on your feet, you have to be able to translate that in a way that conveys the full meaning rather than just a literal translation. So in many ways, that experience is very helpful to me, was very helpful to me in being an M&A lawyer and also finding my path to being an M&A lawyer. And I loved the adrenaline. I loved being in negotiations. I loved the parties coming together to create this agreement that was going to govern the relationship for many, many years. And it was such a fun experience.
And so describe then in law school and in your two summers working at law firms during law school, how you came to corporate and M&A.
Right. So starting law school, after having worked as a translator for the Foreign Affairs Ministry and having my background being interested in international trade, and I was an international law and justice scholar. In law school, I still believed firmly in my mind that I wanted to do international trade law. Or in law school, I actually also got interested in international arbitration too. But still, I didn't even know what kind of corporate transactional law was. I didn't really know that law firms existed until I started at law school. And then after my first year, I decided to work at a law firm because I wanted to get some experience and to see what it was like to practice law at a firm. And I'd always heard you get the best training as a lawyer being at a law firm. So I worked at a firm and I got some litigation experience and also transactional experience. I think that was the first time I worked on like a couple of financing deals. I worked on an M&A deal. And I realized, you know, there are common themes from my negotiation translator period and working on the free trade agreement. There are a lot of similarities that I saw in the context of private transactional law and working on getting a private deal done. And it was the same, you know, negotiations, the trying to solve issues together, really build something together. And the adrenaline, again, of, you know, being kind of on a timeline and trying to get to resolution on these complicated points. And so I to myself, maybe I actually want to do private transactional law. Maybe that's really what, because I feel drawn to it. And so my second summer, I dived into M&A, into financing, like all the transactional work I could do. And I also still at the time continued because I had this lingering thought. I wasn't sure if I still should be doing or wanted to do international arbitration or trade. Again, because corporate law to me wasn't familiar with it. At the time, it didn't come natural to me. So I tried both. But again, it was very clear to me after my summer, I loved M&A. I loved M&A. It was so much fun. And since then, I haven't looked back.
So talk about your years as an associate at Skadden, a couple of key transactions that were critical in your development as a lawyer.
Right. You know, there are so many, David, and it's really hard to pick any single transaction because I feel like every deal you work on as a transactional attorney will help you develop in a certain way, and each deal will strengthen a different muscle you have as a transactional attorney. And I've been very fortunate to have worked on so many incredible deals. I will say there are a couple that come to mind. When I was a mid-level, I worked on a joint venture transaction. It was to create Jacob Dow Egberts, a pure play coffee joint venture. We were representing DE Master Blenders, and the JV partner was Mondelez. And I had worked on joint ventures as a junior associate. I think this was my first time. It was my first time as a mid-level working on a joint venture. And a joint venture is different from when you're selling or buying 100% of a company because you're really constructing a governance framework for two parties, you know, two completely different companies to kind of live together, to coexist and also collaborate for some period of time. And the operating agreement, it's a living document. So you have to, you know, negotiate transfer restrictions, governance rights, exit rights, and all of that. So it was a formative experience for me, basically learning and seeing how a joint venture transaction comes together and being the thick of it and being part of that. And also the special part of that deal was that I went to Amsterdam for the closing. And it was one of those closings that I don't think we do that much anymore, but it was in person. We had all these closing binders and everyone and the actual, you know, wet ink signature pages were all lined up and everything had to get done because we were doing a restructuring before the closing, as you often do in these types of transactions, and everything had to get done in a certain sequence. So it was very well coordinated. A lot of local counsel were there in person, along with the client, of course. So that was also a special part of that transaction. And if I can mention a second one, the other one that comes to mind is when we represented Pfizer in selling a portion of the Hospira business to ICU Medical. And I consider myself very fortunate. I cut my teeth quite early in carve-out transactions when you're selling a portion of a business instead of the whole company. And the Pfizer ICU transaction was, I think, my first carve-out deal as a senior associate. I worked on the deal as a senior. And I like to say that carve-outs are a little bit like organ transplants because you're taking a portion of a business, really, that's part of a live organism, and you're transplanting it into a totally different environment, a totally different live organism. And there are a lot of things that you have to think about, like the impact on the remaining business, how you're going to integrate and transition it into the new business. There are just a lot of additional things you have to think about. And it's complicated. There are a lot of intricate details. And that transaction in particular was quite complicated. I remember it took some time for us as well to get it done. And we were all in person together again for, I think, the signing and also the closing. And I remember I was negotiating. We had our client in our offices, and then we had the other side in a different room. And I would go out and literally it would be me and the other side's lead associate trading drafts and negotiating on the spot and resolving issues on the spot. And I would come back in and get sign off and, you know, discuss with our client and get sign off. And it was that dynamic nature, the intensity of the deal, all of that I still remember vividly. And I do think that was another formative transaction for me.
Talk about, as a mid-level associate, learning how to manage more junior associates, but then still having to manage up.
It's tough, but it's also like the beauty of being a mid-level associate, I think. And I remember vividly, and I always tell when I'm working with mid-level associates, I think that's when you really stretch and grow a lot as a mid-level associate. And because, like you said, you're developing your own style of managing down, and you also have to manage up. The way I approach it, and I also always give this advice to associates, is because I grew up working with a lot of different partners and different clients and different senior associates. And you learn a lot from different management styles, and you're able to kind of take and adopt different pieces and make them your own. Like, some things will work for you, some things won't work for you, some things come more naturally to you. And I think it's a whole process of, as you're working with different people, you also cultivate your own management style. And I think that is, when you're managing a team, I think it's important that you've had experience with different managers so that you have a sense of what you want your management style to be like. And I think in terms of managing up, this is, it's also related, but I always used to think, and I still do, that the senior folks on my team are my clients. Clients are my clients. When you're in the mental mode of treating people that are senior to you as your clients, I think that sets the baseline for how you're managing expectations and how you're managing, period. And it's a soft skill. I mean, you have to tailor it to the different people. I think that's also important, just knowing, and it's the same thing, your external clients, your internal clients, I think you have to be able to read what their work style is to be able to fine tweak your management style in a way that's going to work best for that particular person.
And then how do you adjust your management style when you're working with more junior lawyers, when you're the client?
Right. So with junior lawyers, I think the most important thing for me is I'm very focused on inspiring people to be self-motivated and inspiring people to be really invested in the transaction. And it's not always the easiest thing. And I know it sounds a little bit open-ended. And I think each person has a different way of motivating their teams. But I think that's so important because you want people to genuinely feel invested in that deal and genuinely feel part of a larger team. And one thing I do, and one thing that's very important, I think, is communicating clearly in terms of what's happening, the bigger picture. I always make an effort to explain the bigger picture, what's going on, even if it doesn't directly relate to the specific work stream that the junior lawyer is working on, so that the junior lawyer is plugged into the big picture and also understand how that lawyer's work stream is contributing to the overall scheme of the transaction. And then calibrating myself, the level of guidance and the instructions I give to the associate's respective level of experience, because every associate is different. And I think that's also important from a manager's perspective, that you're calibrating for that. And of course, you're always going to be there to supervise, to quality check, to be a resource, always, of course. But I think at different stages of your career, to be able to really fully develop and stretch, you want those stretch assignments and you want the ability to step up and take on a challenging task. Knowing when each person is ready for that, I think is very important as the manager. And I try to be very sensitive to it. And I think the only way to do it is really to know your associates really well.
Talk about becoming a partner in April of 2020 after everybody's gone home, nobody's in an office, we're in a fully remote work world.
Yeah, it was very surreal because I made partner, it was the first week of April and we were all working from home. And it was also a time where we were fielding a lot of questions from clients about what does the pandemic mean? How does this new world interact with our contractual obligations? There are a lot of unprecedented questions being raised. So we were incredibly busy fielding those questions. And then also we didn't know what was going to happen. So there is a tremendous amount of uncertainty. So then when I made partner, I was, of course, ecstatic and thrilled. But at the same time, we were all at home and nothing quite changed. Nothing changed, at least, you know, physically. I wasn't moving into a nicer office and I wasn't seeing anyone in person either. So it felt very surreal. But at the same time, I think the really nice thing was, and I think it's a unique benefit of having made partner during that time. And it was a very difficult time period for everyone. But we had, instead of doing an in-person toast, we had a WebEx toast. And I had all of my mentors, my sponsors, our executive partner, everyone was on the Zoom, and associates, my peers and junior associates that had worked with me, the M&A partners that I was close with, and they all said something nice. They said something, they all congratulated me personally. And that was really special. So it felt really intimate, even though notwithstanding the completely surreal nature of all of it.
And then talk about a couple of key deals for you since you've become partner.
Yes, there have been many. I will say one that comes to mind is the LVMH Tiffany's deal where we represented LVMH in acquiring Tiffany's. And that one in particular comes to mind because I was a counsel at the time we negotiated. We negotiated the initial merger agreement. And then I made partner. And for the litigation portion of the transaction and the amended merger agreement, I was a partner at the time. So it was a fantastic deal. I think that deal really, to me, represents one firm means, one Skadden means. We say this, I know it sounds cliche, but that deal, you know, we're all working remotely. It's smack in the middle of the pandemic, shortly after I made partner. And I'm working with our litigation team. I'm working with our Paris office seamlessly 24/7. And our client, of course, was also in Paris, and everyone is working via Zoom. So it was such a great experience and really showcased what we're capable of doing together, notwithstanding all the craziness that was going on in the world. Another deal shortly after that was when we represented Veoneer, and initially in a transaction selling the company to Magna International, and then in dealing with the topping bid that came in from Qualcomm and SSW, and eventually Veoneer did terminate its agreement with Magna and sell to Qualcomm and SSW. It was a unique experience. I've been fortunate. I've represented both the topping bidder, and I've also represented the company receiving the topping bid. But navigating that process with the board advising a public company board through that process is a very meaningful experience. So that's another one that comes to mind.
And then finally, how do you decompress from the job?
I love New York City. I've been here 17 years now, which is crazy. But for me, when I want to decompress and I have some time, I'll meet up with my friends. I'll roam around in the city. I'll go to a new restaurant, a new bar, and we'll just kind of walk around. There's something about, especially, the West Village. I think because I went to NYU, there's something about going to the West Village on a weekend. It just like, it's very calming. It has a very calming effect on me. The other thing I like to do is to go to bookstores, and I'll just spend hours in a bookstore. And that, again, it's very therapeutic for me. I love, just I'll sit in the bookstore cafe and I'll read, and then I'll buy a bunch of books. That the physical act of being in a bookstore, there's something about it that is very therapeutic.
Doe, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It was lovely to chat with you.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.